The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. I wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS NFL Podcast. I'm Katie Mox here with Will Brinson. And today we have our friend Brady Quinn, quarterback extraordinaire. While you're here, give us a like and comment or subscribe to the YouTube page. If you're listening to audio only, download, follow, and as always, tell your friends to listen and watch the pod. Before we get into it today, this weekend, CBS heads to a major tournament when the world's best golfers descend on the legendary Oak Hill Country Club, with the winner taking home the coveted Wanamaker Trophy at the PGA Championship. Live coverage on Saturday and Sunday begins at 1 p.m. Eastern, the PGA Championship this weekend on CBS. Fellas, while on that subject, I don't know if you saw the press conference with Rory McIlroy when he said, if I never win another tournament again, I will be satisfied with my career, or something to that note. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. He's lying. He wants the career grand slam. He doesn't have a win at Augusta. He doesn't have a win at the Masters. He's not guaranteed membership at Augusta as a result. I don't know how they do that technically. Like, let's say you're one of the best golfers to ever play the game of golf and you don't win a Masters, but you win the three other majors. He's going for the grand slam. Yeah, yeah. And like, would you be invited to join Augusta? Because I feel like they'd be like, listen, Rory, we'd love to invite you, but you know.
He's been a pretty big ambassador for golf. I mean, really picked up where Tiger's left off.
Oh, sure.
Especially through this whole wave towards the LIV Tour.
Did you see the picture of him and Jay Moynihan walking? And then it's just like, it's him and Jay Moynihan walking, and they're both like, they're both taking the exact timing of their steps, and they're like grinning so heavily, like, oh my God, Jay, it's so great to be with you. Like, oh, I love the PGA Tour. And then behind them is like Colin Morikawa, and he's holding this. He's got one button down. He looks great. He's holding like a vodka soda in his right hand. And he's talking to Phil, who's dressed like Tommy Lee Jones in Men in Black with these big ass sunglasses on, holding this goblet of like Pinot Noir and wearing just a like a Blues Brothers suit. And Phil's just like, Phil looks like he's yelling about cryptocurrency or something. It's a very weird picture.
All right. Can I go off script a little bit? Is that okay, nice. Katie? If I just transition to something else, because this is like, hit something in my brain that I did want to talk to you guys about, only because pew pew pew, 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 pew. So obviously the LIV Tour, whether PGA Tour traditionalists want to be honest about it or not, or acknowledge it or not, it has been good for the PGA Tour players, all right, in many different facets and ways, which led me to think, okay, like this whole talk of potential a draft lottery for the NFL, like would that potentially be better for all parties involved? And I think if you look at how the NFL draft has continually grown and the hype that's surrounding it, I think it's two schools of thought. Like, either you don't touch it because you can't make it much better than what it is, or you're saying like, hey, how can we tap into this thing more? all right, what about a draft lottery special? And all of a sudden we've got, you know, this one, you know, night where we've got a bunch of different stars who are potentially, you know, old Hall of Fame players at those teams that are in the mix for the number one overall pick, and you're hyping it up even more. But I do feel like that'd be like taking a page out of the NBA or NHL playbook. And I do think the safeguards are this. Like right now, you probably only have a couple of teams when they get towards the end of the season who you could say are tanking because, well, right. But they're in that position where they can potentially get the for sure number one overall pick. If you get a lottery system, that's like the final 10 teams for top 10 are like, hey, let's just roll anyone out there that's capable and let's just try to tank for this thing to see if we can't, you know, improve our odds of getting number one overall pick. So I know it wasn't part of the rundown. I apologize, Billy, sorry, Katie and Will.
No,
I think it's necessary either to just, you know, burn this, you know, just completely get rid of this idea and shoot it down, or maybe there's some legs here.
Well, I would say a couple of things, and you know that I'm prone to saying that a lot and then saying like one thing that has, you know, several different tangents related to it. But credit to Albert Breer for mentioning this. And like something you said, Brady, really jarred it loose in my brain where like, dude, the NFL is not going to do this if it looks like they're following the NBA's lead to generate attention. Like they won't do that. They have too much pride. They understand that they're absolutely, I don't know if I'm using this word correctly. They're about to take Christmas from, I was going to use.
They're the Grinch. Just say it. Roger Goodell's the Grinch. Yeah. All right.
Right. That on the show.
He's taking advantage. We have, but he's taking advantage of Adam Silver, who's a nice guy.
They're cucking Christmas from the NBA is what they're doing. That's what I was trying to say. I don't know if that's appropriate or not. Whatever. Can't be the worst thing I say today. Anyway, like I do think though that as Albert Rear pointed out, this might be the year where we could see the NFL say, it appears these teams are bombing their seasons in order to get Drake May and Caleb Williams, which is what the Colts did, by the way. You played them at the end of the year, right, Brady? In 2011 when they landed, or 2012 when they landed. Huh?
Well, that was 2012. Yeah. So luck was already there.
No, a really bad Chiefs team.
Wait. I'm just telling you, you mean when I was with Denver the year before, but in Kansas City when we played them, it was with Andrew Luck.
All I'm saying is I remember – maybe actually when you I remember being forced to watch Tyler Thigpen and Curtis Painter square off against each other. I just assumed you'd been benched for Thigpen at that point. They were running the pistol.
Thanks. I appreciate that. No, I was not a part of that team.
You would have been hurt if that would have been the case. Yeah. Remember they did – actually, you're right, because – Todd Haley ran the.
Hold on, let's say I'm right. Okay, yeah, thank you.
I was making up the bitches. Anyway, the NFL loves to play faux morality police. And what would be better than to claim that now suddenly teams are tanking and it's time to institute a lottery, because an NFL draft lottery would do insane ratings. Like better than the draft, the first night ratings, because I don't know. Let's say you've got a draft where Trevor Lawrence is the number one pick, and are you going to do all non
markets in the mix though for it, right? And by the way, here's my only other thing that I point out why it probably wouldn't work is the NFL schedule makers have already tried to circumvent this by placing divisional games in Week 18. So if you look at it that way too, like there could be some potential stuff on the line where you really can't afford to lose that game at times in order to prove your draft position. But again, look, we've seen coaches before who have no problem laying it all on the line and going up against the organization's best interest and winning a game to not get the number one overall pick. Lovie Smith
may have cost the Texans not just Bryce Young, but next year's number one pick if the Texans are terrible and they end up giving it to Arizona. Tankathon, I think,
Hashtag legend. He should never have to ever buy a drink in Chicago ever again. Ever.
Or Charlotte. If you want. I mean, if Bryce Young's good. At any rate, I just think that if, depending on how many teams you got involved, right? So you have 14 playoff teams. Would you put 17 teams in the lottery? I think that would be.
No, 10.
Yeah, wow. 10, right? But now that gets tricky too, where it's like. You got to do the math.
You got to do the math. All right. We're going to have some teams with the same record. How are we going to handle that, Will? Then you go to head to head. You do the seven other things that the NFL always uses for tiebreakers. So I'm sure we could do that. Or, hey, how about the old fashioned way? We find a unweighted coin. And just like we do to start a game, we just flip it. And we have those two teams heads or tails.
But I'm saying that all the different tiebreakers and all of that would actually be beneficial for the NFL because you would essentially eliminate a bunch of teams in week 18 from, like, if you're in a six-way tie for the 10th spot to get in the lottery, you're not figuring that out on the fly, like looking at the scoreboard and running the strength of schedule. I mean, maybe somebody will do the analytics for it where it's like, Sean, we need to give up 14 points in the fourth quarter and have the, you know, have the Cardinals score 17. Like, there's just too much going on. So I actually love the idea. You would prevent the teams at the very bottom, and obviously Lovie Smith, the oppo of that, but you would prevent those teams from doing the stuff you don't want them to do because there's no real benefit unless you just heavily weight the worst record. And then you would make it too convoluted for those teams to figure it out, and fans would go bananas. Can you imagine if the Jets or the Giants or the Cowboys landed the number one overall pick in a Trevor Lawrence style draft? You would have Roger Goodell frozen envelope, like conspiracy theories painted all over Reddit.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. I mean, obviously part of the reason why I bring that up is because the 2024 draft does have a guy like Caleb Williams who teams are probably going to tank for. Maybe even Drake May to some degree. I'm sure there's some other quarterbacks who are going to be part of the mix. Now, I think Joe Milton at Tennessee is probably that guy who could fly up, you know, draft boards because of his size, his skill set, you know, that the arm strength, the athleticism, all the things, kind of like Anthony Richardson. And so, you know, you're going to have some of those guys that create waves, but because Caleb Williams is going to be the number one overall pick, I think there's a lot of teams that would be putting themselves in that position, but currently probably would be saying, hey, let's just try to get the number one pick to take Caleb Williams. We'll turn this whole thing around. I'm still a believer, whether you believe it or not, that it's going to be Washington that does that. Because he is from the D.C. area. It would make a lot of sense. You got a new ownership group, I think, unless this whole thing falls through.
I think we're good.
I don't know. Apparently, it took on more debt than they were supposed to, and they've got a lot of minority owners involved that people are like, wait a second, we don't usually, we're not used to having this big of an ownership group. And
I think they kind of got cleared through the next hurdle recently in the last few days. But look, if they don't pull it off, Brian Davis is in the wings. He's fine. He'll pick up the tab.
Or the Canadian guy with the incredibly long last name, the Abalabalabalabalopoulos. Okay. So,
all right, boys. Yep. All right. Let's keep this moving here, fellas. All right. Alex Smith had some strong opinions regarding whether a defensive head coach is able to develop a young quarterback. I'm going to paraphrase this. He said, there's a different mentality from my career when you play for an offensive head coach that wants you to light up the scoreboard and outscore the opponent, whereas a defensive head coach really just says, hey, don't screw it up. Don't turn the ball over. So, Brady, what is the difference between an offensive and a defensive head coach for a quarterback? Oh, you're on mute.
You're muted.
I'm sorry. I can't wait to see how Billy's going to clip this and then post it on social media to then see the type of reactions we're going to get, because he's going to take the most viral thing that I say right now and he's going to be able to throw it out there in the ether. So there's without a doubt a big difference, in my opinion, in the manner in which a head coach who's an offensive-minded coach versus a head coach who's a defensive-minded head coach, for a lot of the reasons that Alex Smith laid out. I think conservative play, but I think more so than that, I would just say big picture. I think a lot of offensive-minded head coaches look at the quarterback position and they understand the perspective of really what's going on. And I was once told this by one of the all-time greats, Mike Holmgren. And is that, you know, he talked about his time in Green Bay with Brett Favre and initially maybe going through a period of time where it wasn't going so hot, but them having this galvanizing moment where he kind of put his arm around him, said, look, one day it's either going to be you and me standing next to the dumpsters or you and me holding up a Lombardi together. And it just so happened to be it. Everything worked out. Favre's a Hall of Famer. Mike Holmgren's holding up his Lombardi trophy with him. And I think that's an example of the type of partnership that you have when you've got an offensive-minded head coach with a quarterback. I think the defensive-minded head coach tends to look at it not so much as a partnership, but maybe like an arm's length kind of agreement. And they almost look at each other as like you're both jockeying for that same spot. Because you know if things don't work out, one of the two of you is going to move on. And usually the defensive head coach makes the change at quarterback. So I'll just look at last year, for example. If you look at a lot of the offensive minded head coaches that got clipped, Cliff Kingsbury, all right? Some could say like, hey, it was ultimately on him, Kyler Murray, and then it worked for a while, then not. He gets clipped. You kind of go on down the line of the head coach that's an offensive minded head coach and a quarterback versus defensive minded head coach and a quarterback. It's usually a quarterback change that happens first with defensive minded head coach, and it's the head coach getting fired if it's an offensive minded head coach, because he's going to give that quarterback the benefit of the doubt. He's going to give that quarterback a little longer leash, if you will, to take chances or make mistakes or mature into the position. And I just think that's the reality of, you know, offensive kind of perspective as far as how they view the quarterback and him really being the face of the team, the face of the franchise and all what comes with that. Where I think a defensive-minded head coach is thinking to himself, you know, defense wins championships. I just need my guy not to screw things up. And so I'd rather run the ball, play a little more conservatively. And usually if things aren't going well and he is making mistakes, you're like, nope, I'm not waiting for this guy to grow. I'm going to go in and put him on the bench. I need someone to get in here and just execute the offense good enough so we don't have to worry about putting our defense in a bad spot or having to win in a shootout. And look, I'm not saying that there hasn't been successful defensive-minded head coaches. Obviously, Bill Belichick is the greatest of all time, working with Tom Brady. But even then, you could tell like there was some times where clearly those two didn't get along necessarily, because I think Tom looked at it as like, hey, man, I've got more equity built up here. You know, we don't have to have that sort of relationship. Like, we're always going to be tied together forever. They break up. Tom goes to Tampa, wins a Super Bowl. Kind of proves his point. But that's how I've seen it. And again, I'm not saying that defensive-minded head coaches can't be successful or they can't develop a quarterback. Like, I look at Brandon Staley, for example, in L.A. Well, he's got a quarterback background. I'm just saying defensive-minded head coach, right, as far as his coaching career, but he's got the perspective of more of an offensive-minded head coach. That's why he's aggressive. That's why he applies the analytics and going forward on fourth down and giving Justin Herbert a chance. So there's examples of that, but I think it's seldom sometimes that you see a defensive-minded head coach that has the perspective that's going to be able to sit there and say, I am willing to, you know, put my job on the line before the quarterback to let him develop, to let him grow, to see what we've got in this young man.
I think a lot of times too, with the defensive minded head coaches, and the one thing that stood out to me, which I mean, I think you're right on all of it, Brady, but the part about like, all right, a lot of times defensive minded head coaches, particularly the older ones, prefer to have the quarterback not screw it up, as opposed to letting the quarterback drive the offense and drive the team. And I think you can kind of, you know, run through like, you know, like the franchises too a little bit. I mean, like, the Bills, right? Sean McDermott, defensive minded head coach, but he understood it. Like, he brought in Brian Daboll and he trusted Brian Daboll, enabled Brian Daboll, and now Ken Dorsey to run this offense that we thought, you know, would help elevate Josh Allen. So there's like, that's a case of a defensive minded head coach who is willing to embrace both sides of the ball. On the other hand, you have a guy like a John Fox type, and I don't mean to pick on John Fox, but an older defensive-minded head coach. I think Ron Rivera, whose hat you could throw in the ring as well. Pete Carroll, even. Pete Carroll's had, you know, good quarterbacks. Russell Wilson was on a Hall of Fame track and was never received MVP vote, but was a viable candidate. Pete Carroll doesn't want to let Russ cook. I mean, that's the whole thing, right? And, you know, you kind of go through the teams, and you can sort of look at, okay,
look at the most stark contrast, like Brian Flores, because you kind of said an older defensive-minded head coach, right? But like, look at Flores and how he handled things with Tua. It was like, all right, 2-minute drive, let's put in Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's like, well, hold on, dude. Like, at some point, we've got to see whether or not he's capable of doing this, right?
Right.
And so he moves on. Mike McDaniel takes over. Boom. It's like, look at the confidence. Look at how he's playing. Look at how he handled things. And I just think you tend to see that more often with an offensive-minded head coach, even Kevin O'Connell and how he's handled things with Kirk Cousins in Minnesota. You just tend to see that more often with an offensive-minded head coach than a defensive-minded head coach.
And the other thing, too, is that a lot of times an offensive-minded head coach is going to cater his offense to the skill set and the variable abilities of that quarterback more often than a defensive-minded head coach is going to be. When a defensive-minded head coach does that, it's typically, again, because they're empowering a smart hire at the offensive coordinator position and then saying, you do the work on the offensive side of the ball. So I don't know. I think ultimately it's probably a lot of things in life where there's you know, there's this side and there's this side.
Right.
And they like to argue about it. But the, down the middle is where you want to live, where you're an offensive coach who caters stuff to your quarterback, or you're a defensive-minded head coach who's smart enough to bring in an offensive mind that will help your quarterback grow.
Think about it this way.
Why are you grinning? Grinning.
I'm picturing this in my head. Like, the ultimate goal of an offensive-minded head coach and what they dream of, right? Because everyone dreams of winning the Lombardi, but they all see it differently, right? They see the moment they win it differently. So an offensive-minded head coach sees it being like a completion, you know, down at the goal line. He stretches across the end. He gets it. Touchdown. They win. Like, that's how the offensive-minded head coach pictures it in the final moments of the Super Bowl, and then hoisting up that Lombardi trophy and looking at his call sheet and circling it and, you know, putting it in a frame and putting it on his wall forever. And the defensive-minded head coach is like, no, no.
Big stop.
We see it as it's a big stop. It's a sack fumble. It's an interception. It's the, you know, the stop that they needed to on fourth down or at the goal line.
The Rams-Titans Super Bowl. It's like, exactly. Kevin Dyson's just short. Whereas an offensive guy is like, if he'd gotten one more yard, we would have won, you know, we would have won the Lombardi, right?
That's like a defensive-minded head coach's dream of how they end up winning that Lombardi. So it's just, when you think about the perspective of the ultimate goal and how they envision it happening, like, that's kind of the difference. And so when you think about an offensive-minded head coach, who's he looking – who's he standing next to holding that Lombardi? Probably the quarterback. And the defensive-minded head coach, he might be, but he's probably up there, like, by himself with his defense, everyone else, like, holding up, hoisting, you know, whatever that case may be. So it's just an entirely different, I think, perspective and mindset that you see from both sides.
I think you can point out that, like, you know, I mean, offensive-minded head coach, like Pat Shurmur, I'm just thinking about the Giants, didn't work.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously both sides won't necessarily work.
Right.
I think the general point, though, is but think about that.
Quarterbacks drive teams in the NFL, and the offensive-minded head coach is more likely to be symbiotic with the quarterback.
Yeah, not so much that. I just think an offensive-minded head coach is more willing to let himself get fired as opposed to making a quarterback change.
Oh, yeah. That works.
Whereas a defensive-minded head coach is going to say, nope, get on the bench. I need someone out here who's not going to mess things up, and then we'll try to win a low-scoring, close, tight game.
That's exactly how Belichick and Brian Flores, who's from the Belichick school, operate. And in fact, you could even argue that Tom Brady, during the first third of his career, before he became Tom Brady with the long flowing hair and the supermodel wife and the amazing passing records, was a game manager and was the perfect fit for Belichick because he just didn't screw anything up and he didn't make mistakes and he was clutch as hell. And a man of a model American. Different teams.
Yes. All right. Moving on to the next subject here, guys. New season, new media right agreements for the NFL and their broadcast partners. CBS, Fox, NBC, ESPN, all guaranteed one wild card game during wild card weekend. CBS, Fox, and NBC rotating that second game, which means there was one more up for grabs, a sixth game for the price tag of $110 million. Ooh. NBC's Peacock was granted the rights to the sixth wild card game. It raised a lot of eyebrows because, one, you're allowing a playoff game to go to a streamer, and two, not Amazon, who's already your partner. Brady, what do you think?
Well, I think it's obviously a play by what Comcast, who I think owns the rights to Peacock. And so you're essentially getting them and everyone to sign up. You should see that jump or that boost for what is it, $4.99 or whatever it is to basically go watch this game. I think you saw that.
It'd be a free trial. Then they're hoping everybody forgets to cancel in 30 days or 7 days.
Pretty much. You're automatically billed for the second month. But
oh, yeah, I definitely just spent $4.99 on Peacock for like the 12th month in a row. I mean,
I don't know if you're going to deal with Comcast customer service, though. So good luck with that.
Yeah.
But I think you saw a little bit of a jump like that, too, for Thursday Night Football when, like, things gotten closer. Like, after the announcement was made that Amazon had won it, like, I don't know that people were like sprinting to go sign up, but then right before Thursday Night Football first started, you were going and people were like, oh, wait a second. I gotta get a Prime membership now. Like, what the hell? Yeah. And so people started, you saw that jump. And I think that's probably what they're looking for. It's good for promotional and marketing purposes as well. I think the secret behind it, though, is just getting more people signed up so you can use it for, you know, your data and analytics when you're looking at generating ad revenue. You know, now you're really getting to know who your customer is, who your consumer is a lot better. And that's the power of streaming. And it's nothing against the broadcast networks, but you know, if I turn on my TV, there's a limited amount that they necessarily know from that as compared to what they can find out from the agreements that you sign up for on your streaming platforms, where you essentially, when you're like, have you agreed to all the terms? It's like, yes, I have. It's like, well, do you know we own you now? In fact, like your entire family, your house, we own everything. It's like, Oh, I didn't see that in the fine print on page 28. Whoops. But that's kind of how this works. So I think you're going to see it, you know, it's going to be more commonplace than not. Notre Dame fans went through this because they had streamed I think it was Notre Dame Toledo. They had streamed exclusively on Peacock. And yes, I think there were some bandwidth, maybe buffering issues, which is the big concern here is consumption. And then I think the biggest concern should be with the books. All these sports books could be a little bit concerned, especially about live bets.
Oh, yep.
If there's any sort of issues whatsoever with, you know.
Well, the thing with that is that the sports books actually usually run faster. The sports books live odds will run almost faster than the NFL stat feed. They basically have like a pipeline for that. Right,
but your issue is going to end up being when someone comes up with a claim saying like, "Hey, dude, I was like,
oh, right, yeah, that could be a yeah."
And then you're going to get books saying, "You know what? We'll forgive that because we're such, you know." We're such a nice guy.
We like the public.
Yeah, and we'll give you this next deal. Look at this. Yeah.
Here's $100 in free bets.
We'll boost your third and fourth quarter bets. Like,
dude, you should be doing ads. That's good. You're like, boost. Now I'm done.
Yeah. Well, no, you're not done. In fact,
I'm not done.
In fact, I'm back.
Katie, are you aware of this commercial, by the way? I mean, like, so when Brady came out of college, he was
when I graduated and entered the draft. It's probably a better way of saying it.
When Brady entered the world of being a professional,
I get
which
part,
we all do at some point in time, and you just have to grow up and be a professional. And Brady did it when he left Notre Dame and when he went to the NFL. And I think that there was a case where Brady got a Hummer once he got to the NFL.
It was more than one, but
Well, you had several. You had one for your whole family. Hummers? Got Hummers, but he also got what was the supplement company?
EAS was the name of the supplement.
Yes. And there's a commercial where Brady's like working out, and he's like, then he like chugs a shake.
Story. All right, I tore my PCL in the bowl game. They asked me to go out to film this thing in LA. And I was like, at that point in time, was not running 100%. They like wanted me to run on this treadmill without anything. It was just like a spinning tread on the ground that you just kind of had to jump on and run. I was like, I'm not cleared for any of this. Like, I'm not going to be working out the combine. I'm going to have to like push my pro day, like any of this. But I had signed the deal relatively fast after I had obviously graduated and entered into the draft. It was a Columbus based company, Abbott Labs, who owned the EAS. Right there in Columbus, Ohio. So I'd signed on, awesome deal, but they wanted me to be a part of this. And so we tried to make do as best we could with like the shoot and the commercial, what it was going to look like. The biggest mistake though, was at the very end, you know, I grabbed this, what they call an RTD, a ready to drink protein shake. I drink it and then I go, now I'm done. And the problem is, I didn't realize we were going to do like 25, 30 takes. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, I'll just drink these, you know, it's a protein shake, you know, kind of getting a workout in. And I was about like 20 into it. My stomach felt awful at the end of the day, like way too much consumption of protein shakes that any human being should ever be a part of. So at the very end, I was like, no, I'm done. It's like almost painful to even say it. And they're like, okay, I think we're going to take the second one. I think the second one is the one that's going to work for this. So,
well, but notably, sorry, I'm trying to do this. I'm listening to here you go. But there's a commercial too. But then Jim Rome on, our colleague Jim Rome, who's just the best, did his Rome is Burning show on ESPN back in the day. He would do that rundown. I think it was at the beginning of the show. And like this one segment was called Quinn, Lose or Draw. Good little captioning there.
Yep.
And Brady, there was a report. People are trying to slander Brady. The Browns are trying to slander Brady during contract talk, saying that like he was getting the calls in, like he couldn't like had to get the calls from the sideline or some nonsense like about the playbook. And so and Rome got Brady's back on this clip in particular, and he goes, "Now I'm done." And like that's like it just like helped like push it viral just because. But Brady just in the end just like, "Now I'm done." And it was like your Batman moment, honestly.
I know, but the last take though, you should have seen like the last two or three.
You about
like,
to vomit everywhere?
Like, no, I'm done. it's like chocolate protein shake, like dripping out. I was like
me in a bar at 3 a.m. or something, just like, now I'm done.
So I was like, I don't even know what to do with my hands anymore.
We are not done, but we do have to take a quick break. You're watching Pick Six. We'll be right back.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game.
That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
Witness one of the world's biggest stars as a family man.
Really?
May 17th.
I just jumped into Stallone.
There's no place like Stallone.
It is about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
He's the last person that wanted to do this show yet. He sees the camera and he's like, am I in frame?
That's the truth.
The Family Stallone, streaming May 17th, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to the Pick Six podcast. That was fun. And I can't wait to watch that actually with the sound on a little bit later today. But let's pivot here, talk about Davante Adams. He did go all pro for the third time, this time without Aaron Rodgers. And he basically said, it proved that I am me. Brady, what do you think?
Well, yes. Yes, you are. I'm not sure who else you would be, but yes. I also am me, and Will is him, and Katie, you're you. So there you go. I'm not really the interesting thing is, like, he's been a little more outspoken since he's joined the Las Vegas Raiders. It didn't seem like he was like that as much in Green Bay, and you know, I'm not sure what conclusion you want to draw to that. On the radio show I do, LeVar Arrington's been saying he thinks that they were chopping it up maybe in the barbershop or something, and like something was said and he was like, wait a second, I need to make sure that this is known out there. So he thinks that's where maybe this all started, or the origin of this was. It is an interesting timing though, with a few things that have come out. The first being the fact that, look, he was playing with a quarterback who was about to ready to have five consecutive seasons throwing for over 4,000 yards. Carr would have had 4,000 again last year had he not been benched. He was around 3,600, somewhere there.
Specifically for contractual reasons, too.
100%. Contractual reasons and all that. It wasn't like performance or injury or anything. So he would have been a fifth straight season. And the only reason I'm saying that is because you do have to have a capable quarterback, right? This isn't like the chicken and the egg. Like, if you're going to be a Hall of Fame wide receiver, you usually need to have a guy who can get you the football and has been capable enough. And I think maybe there's a little more question this year based on his comments about him speaking with the front office, right? Dave Ziegler and maybe even Josh McDaniels about some of their moves and saying he doesn't necessarily agree with them, but he's, you know, gotta work with them the best he can, because your guy, Jimmy G, Katie's never thrown for over 4,000 yards. So it might be a little more. Well, and he struggled to stay healthy, which I love Jimmy G. Okay. He's one of my favorite human beings in the NFL. Every time I've dealt with him, the dude's, you know, just an smart, easy guy. He's a great guy. So it's more of the fact that he hasn't been able to stay healthy as much. And you know, he's been on offenses that maybe haven't necessarily wanted to throw for 4,000 yards. Right. Sure. So it's just kind of interesting that Davante Adams would say these things now, and the comments kind of lead to the fingers pointing to, like, okay, maybe he's not a fan of the whole Jimmy Garoppolo signing, whatever the case may be.
Well, he's not still a fan of Derek Carr leaving. I think he came there for Derek Carr.
I think that too. And then probably, which again, that wasn't Derek Carr's, you know, choice and decision. Yes. So that's part of it. But you know, I also think it's frustrating. Like, he had stability in Green Bay. I mean, if you look at, for example, his last season in Green Bay versus his most recent season in Las Vegas, you know, the yards are close, touchdowns he had more. he was targeted more, but he actually ended up having less receptions than he did his final year in Green Bay.
He was way more up and down too. He had some real duds and some real big games, but it didn't ever feel consistent.
I don't know that that's on him though.
Sure.
Right? Like he's learning a new offense. Derek Carr's learning a new offense. You know, that chemistry is going to take a while to gel, and it's not going to be like what he had with Aaron in his final year in Green Bay. So it goes to show you, like, there's obviously going to be, things are going to take time. There's going to be some frustration that comes along with that. But he's a Hall of Famer. Like, I don't remember anyone ever doubting whether or not Devontae Adams was on the path to be a Hall of Fame wide receiver. Like, it's kind of odd to me because I'm like, did someone say this? Did I miss something? Like, why is he saying this now?
So Ryan Wilson likes to get mad at me when I suggest that people are Hall of Famers. Wilson is like, it's like weird. He's just like a prude about the Hall of Fame for some reason. Like, he's like, you think Andrew Whitworth's a Hall of Famer? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty confident Andrew Whitworth. I mean, don't you think Andrew Whitworth's a Hall of Famer?
I think so. I mean, I have to look. I know is a Hall of Famer. Joe Thomas, baby, because he's going in this fall and I can't wait for it.
Isn't he already in?
Yeah, he's already in. That's what I'm saying. He's going in. Yeah,
Wow. You know he's a Hall of Famer. Congratulations.
I'm just saying. Yeah.
Oh, you're celebrating your buddy. Sorry. Yeah. I knew what you were doing. I was trying to mess with you. You know who's but I agree. I think Devontae Adams, you know, I mean, obviously, if he just quit playing football right now, he might not get in the Hall of Fame. If he plays out his career to a similar level that we've seen thus far in expectations, and he's a no-brainer Hall of Famer. I guess it's probably a thing where, you know, it could be where somebody said, like you say, the barbershop comment, but like somebody at one point was like, wow, third quarterback or fourth quarterback in 3 years, huh? It's weird, you know, like it just rubbed in the wrong way, whatever it was. And he sort of took it as, oh, everyone thinks that Aaron is the, or maybe Aaron just getting all the attention. It was bothering him. I don't know. I mean, whatever the case may be, dude, nobody thought, I mean, Devontae Adams is a benefit to any quarterback he plays with.
I think he was probably fired up to prove that he could still get it done without Aaron Rodgers. Even if nobody was doubting it, he probably just wanted to prove that he could do it on his own. But Brady, what is his motivation for coming out into the press and saying, we don't see eye to eye? I don't see eye to eye with what, you know, the Raiders front office is doing right now. Clearly, there's some kind of motivation. What do you think Devontae wants?
I don't know. It's tough to know, right? I mean, if you're the organization, it's nice when you talk to a player or you say, hey, we'd love to get your input on what you think of our offseason moves. And I think we all have people in our lives who they're like, hey, can I get your advice? And you're like, oh yeah, sure. Of course. I'd love to help. And then you give them your advice. They do the exact opposite. Right. Like that.
Yeah, it's so annoying.
It is, but at the same time, like when those people are your family members or people that like are friends and you love them, you just kind of come to realize like, all right, I just need to reaffirm what they really want to do because that's what they want, right? Like they want to talk to someone to say like, hey, you're doing the right thing. You should do that. Like you're perfect for that, right? And so it was nice that Dave Ziegler or whoever said this to him that like, hey, we'd love to bring you in and get your advice on some offseason moves. But when has that ever worked out for a franchise? It's usually never worked out unless they just like literally let that player do all of that and just build that roster. So, which can help when you.
Even then, Tom Brady brought in Antonio Brown and blew the whole thing up.
True. Well,
there was some of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like every time a family member is like, "Hey, I've got a fantasy draft this weekend, or I need to get my NFL picks in." It's like, "What do you think about this?" I'm like, "No." They're like, "Oh, I can't believe you think that. I think the other way. I'm going to do what I think." It's like, that's great. I'm glad you called me and we wasted 10 minutes of our time here. That's great.
Not 10 minutes of our time, 10 minutes of your time.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But in my time, clearly Uncle Mills, I'm just kidding. Uncle Mills doesn't do this, but it's like my time's 1.5 times as valuable as your time, sir. So don't do that to me. You're wasting 2.5 times value. Imagine how valuable Brady's time is. It's like 5 times the normal human.
To answer the question, though, I don't really know if there is like motivation behind it. Yeah. This could be laying the foundation, the groundwork for like in the future, if things don't go well, being like, all right, I'm under contract. That number is going to look a lot more reasonable as the salary cap goes up per year with the league being in a healthy spot. And potentially maybe the Raiders saying, all right, we want to rebuild. So it almost sets you up for that sort of position, too, because he is under contract till I believe 2026. And the number seems big now, but it only will obviously go up over the period of time. But once you have them under contract, you can always renegotiate that deal.
It seems like to me in the last couple of years that players are more comfortable talking to the media about how disgruntled they are, that they don't agree with things that are happening in the organization. Brady, do you feel like there's been an uptick in that in the last few years?
Yeah, because I think people think that it works out for them. Like, I think you think of some of the recent cases, and it's like teams have been more than willing to say, all right, you don't like it here? Like, we'll figure it out. Like, we'll send you off somewhere else, or we'll figure out a way of making this work. I think, you know, it's obviously easier to paddle downstream than it is upstream. And I think a lot of times you look at players who are disgruntled and you feel like, why do we want a bad apple as a part of this team if they don't want to be here? And by no means am I saying like this is that situation at all. But I would say there was probably some players that Josh McDaniels first dealt with when he got to Denver. And, you know, they ended up moving on, going somewhere else over the course of the year plus that Josh was in with the Denver Broncos. So maybe there's a thought there that, again, this could be the foundational work. If things don't work out, he doesn't like it there, they can move on. You never know. It's sometimes hard to tell. But I think between that and then everyone changing their Twitter bio, like that really has any sort of weight whatsoever.
God, I hate that more than anything.
And everyone does it. Everyone does. They're like, oh, watch this.
Also, it's like Julio Jones is like, I deleted all my Instagram pictures of me as a Falcons. It's like, what?
You're a Hall of Famer as a Falcon. You probably want to keep those.
Yeah, like you don't think, do you think somebody's just, the Instagram fairy is going to magically re-upload those for you? Like you just deleted your whole, you know, it's like delete your profile. Go away. No one cares what you post on your Instagram as if it's some coded message from the millennial Falcon. I see what I did there. This generation of people who send coded messages through Instagram, it's pathetic. It's like, just say what you say, mean what you mean, say what you say, and be an adult about it. Like, I don't need you. Kyler Murray deletes all the Cardinals references from his Instagram. It's like, you're still under contract. Yes. No one cares if you delete your Instagram pictures, dude. They still exist. Like, God, it drives me nuts.
Yeah.
How do you really feel?
Well, I'm
on a microphone, so I kind of held back a little bit.
I do think social media gives people, because, you know, you have all these yes men that are in your ear telling you how great you are every day and are condoning the behavior, and it inflates all of the egos of some of these players. And to your point, Brady, it rarely ever works out for them. They don't exactly get what they want. We're taking a quick break here. You're watching Pick Six. We'll be right back.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Welcome back to Pick Six. I'm Katie Mox here with Will Brinson. And today, Brady is on the show. Make sure you join us all week long to keep up to date with all your NFL offseason news. Remember to like, comment, and subscribe on the YouTube page. All right, let's talk about the Vikings here. Who is Kirk Cousins' successor?
I don't know. I don't think that guy's on the roster, maybe.
Your cousin?
Yeah. could be Jaren Hall, you know, their BYU quarterback they took this year. Probably is not, though. You know,
they still have who's it that Spielman took, the
Kellen Mond.
Yeah,
it's not there anymore. I believe he might be in Cleveland now. I could be wrong.
All right,
just a guess. But
Nick Mullins on Nick the roster. Mullins.
That's right.
Nick Mullins.
Oh, look how happy Katie is. Yeah.
Oh, come on.
You love your 49ers. By the way, sidebar, because I'm not sure. Yeah, Drake May. Dominic, the blind's probably true. There's probably going to be a good chance that the quarterback is playing in college at somewhere at this point. By the way, sidebar, Christian McCaffrey said the trade to San Francisco, this might hurt Will, but it's going to make Katie happy. Greatest thing that's ever happened to him.
Sure.
Now, some would say the fact that he just got engaged to Olivia Kupel recently probably should be higher on that list.
That's somebody who's engaged. That's somebody who's either like dating or engaged, but not married and definitely doesn't have kids. Because the second that you get married or the second that you have children, you learn to say when somebody's like, what did you think about this? Like, wait, Brady, when the Irish won the national championship, how did it feel? You like, well, I'm almost, a father, almost and a husband.
As good. Yeah, almost as good as the birth of all my children.
Like, in your head, you're thinking the greatest day of my entire life by far, by like a substantial margin. But in your there's a filter between your brain and your mouth that is like, mention your family, and you're like, obviously, as a husband and a father, I can't say it was the greatest day of my life because I have those things that are obviously better. I would never say that. However, if those things weren't here, it would be the greatest day of my life. That's sort of
I think he meant professionally, but yes, I agree with what you're saying.
That's the filter.
That's where you that either there's a filter or you've got, you know, add-ons, right? That you need to be putting a part of that, or like disclaimers, like you create the disclaimer first, then you go to the best thing that's happening professionally.
Obviously,
right?
My engagement to insanely attractive and cool, world famous supermodel who makes way more money than I do.
Yep, more famous.
Isn't better than being traded in the NFL. I mean,
some people would say is living on the edge. I mean, I'm just saying, man. Like, you all of a sudden you make her upset. Next thing you know, there's plenty of suitors.
She deletes all the Christian McCaffrey stuff from her Instagram.
Scrubbing. Speaking of scrubbing the Instagram, the Vikings also scrubbed Dalvin Cook from their banners. What's next for the running
back? That's a good joke, right? Like, don't you think this is probably like them firing back for like every player doing this to their Twitter bio? Like, this is like somewhere inside the front office. They're all like laughing and joking around.
No, I don't think so. I think it's more of a, they have, they always like, I think it's, I agree with you. Like, I think it's hilarious that the social media teams, like we had to, I think it's like, they don't want to trade Dalvin Cook and then get burnt because he's on the banner, maybe. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't think they're trolling him. I think Dalvin will take it as being trolled, and like any NFL player is going to take it. Like if
now every other NFL team will knows that he's on the trade block because he's now not a part of the banner anymore. So like you're showing him your cards. You're basically what do you want from him?
I get, by the way, the Pick Six podcast should follow the Vikings. I don't know why we don't do that. love the Vikings. They're like an average at best social media team. they're like an average social media team.
Where's the drop of the, where's that drop?
They're average at best. Like, are the Vikings blowing you? Do you ever remember talking about the Vikings social media team outside of this removing Dalvin Cook from the header?
Maybe they're
So what are we throwing the Tennessee Titans like ahead of everyone else?
Panthers are one for me. The Titans have vaulted their way. Dude, the Panthers are objectively hilarious.
Who did the anime this year in the draft?
The Chargers are
unbelievable.
Now, they did it last year too.
I know, but I'm saying like every year they do that. I'm like, there are so many little digs that you got to pay attention. Oh, it's amazing.
Like Derrick Henry's being operated on as a cyborg, and they have like mayo and hot dogs, or like what else did he eat? He did the hot Will Levis did the mayo and the.
What was the public health warning? What was the public health warning they put for one of the teams?
Oh God! Didn't they do MRSA at one point? Like, didn't they do a MRSA dig?
Maybe I can't remember what team they did it for.
Did you see what they did for the Jets? They put Manish Mehta, like hasn't had a job in the NFL in like 2 or 3 years. It's like a wanted, like a missing poster in the background. Just an absolutely, because he like ripped Justin Herbert or something one time. Just a totally unnecessary, savage dig at like a reporter who's no longer covering the NFL.
And you know what? That's how it works, okay? You guys yappity yappity yap all every player's career and all that. You're not used to getting it right back in your face. But there you go.
That's the only reason
how about them apples, Will? How about them apples? All right.
It's actually how about them apples, I believe. It's not them apples.
That's what I said. How about them apples?
You said them.
How about them apples?
The point being is the only reason I do this podcast is for you is to get it thrown back in my face on a weekly basis.
Well, you should do a Mount Rushmore of the social media teams, because I think that would actually be hilarious.
That would be good. I like that idea.
I like that. Panthers, Chargers, Titans right now. And who likes to dunk on people on social
media? There's some teams I'm like, are they even active on social media at all? I mean, do the Browns, are they active on, or they kind of stay away from it?
They don't really do. It's hard. The Browns do some stuff, but they're like.
I'm sure they get killed if they it also
depends on the Panthers. And you could have seen this when Matt Rhule got fired. You could tell he had a heavy hand in that stuff. As I understand it, he was in. Which, by the way, maybe a lesson to be learned there is you don't need to worry about tweets and articles on Panthers.com and maybe focus on the game plan. But neither here nor there. depending on who is carrying the most weight in each particular building, you can have maybe a little more active, a little more leeway, et cetera, et cetera. Depending on the creative mind,
et cetera, et cetera. I see.
There's one thing in the comments that I think needs to be highlighted. Dom said, I follow the Eagles on Twitter and they're not great.
I follow all the NFL teams.
Is that just to get Billy fired up? What are we doing?
Well, because you know what? Yes. Because you know what Billy does is anytime there's a positive Eagles thing, he gets highlighted and thrown into the chat.
Billy just blocked. Sure, look at this. This is embarrassing. You're supposed to be chatting about football, not being an Eagles over there. Anyways, the Eagles are fine, I guess.
Yeah. Well, okay. What's next for Dalvin Cook? Let's get back to that. What's going on with Dalvin Cook?
I don't know. I mean, you make your way to a team where, you get a fair amount of the carries, maybe closer to home, if you will, or maybe a contender, if you find a team for the right price. I mean, that's the hard thing though. Who is it? Skip Pete, who is Zeke Elliott's running back coach in Dallas. He had talked about why Zeke isn't signed yet. And just said, look, there's a lot of running backs who they've been paid X so far, and they feel like they view themselves as a certain type of back still in this league. And unfortunately, the league shifted to the point now where there's not many bell cow backs outside of Derrick Henry, and not many teams that want to take on that offensive approach. So you got to kind of find your role. And it's tough, but it's just the reality of where the NFL goes right now. So I feel for running backs. I mean, they're obviously have a huge impact on offensive output and taking pressure off quarterbacks. And someone in his position who's, a Pro Bowl caliber running back, isn't going to necessarily get the opportunity that I think he's probably looking for. But that's just the nature of the league right now. It goes in ebbs and flows, and maybe that changes. And maybe, he finds himself in a different team with, a different situation. But I'll be curious to see where he ends up. I mean, Tampa's a team maybe that you'd look at. I'm just trying to think of, teams off the top of my head. At least takes him back to his college days, been a little closer to home if he wants that.
Yeah, the other team I thought of, and you'll be like, this team doesn't apply. I take it back. They signed somebody in the offseason. But I'm not going to say it because I'll get made fun of. But the point being is that, I think you look at Dalvin Cook, and it's 1 year playing the entire season, and that was last year in 2022 when he played 17 games, only had 264 carries. I mean, that's a lot of carries. But, this is a guy who has been injured plenty in his career. That was some of the concern when he was coming out of college. Out of Florida State, and he's now going to be 28 in August.
How old was he when he came in the league? 21, 20?
He was 22 his rookie year. So he's he's played 6 years.
I feel like he's been in the NFL a lot longer than that.
I mean, he was that same class as McCaffrey and Joe Mixon.
All those guys feel like they've been in the NFL for a decade.
Fournette, Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey, Joe Mixon were all the 17 class, right? Who am I missing for that draft class? I mean,
crazy to think just how much. Think about that period in the draft and how running backs were kind of viewed and all that. And then to today's NFL and what the free agent market looks like, now this year maybe is a little different considering Bijan Robinson and the running back went to Detroit. It's my mind's
Jameer Gibbs.
Yeah. But that's usually not a typical year.
Well, and it's interesting if you kind of watch the trends about it too. So in 2016, we had Zeke Elliott go fourth overall, and it really catapulted the Cowboys into success. But you can kind of look,
everyone followed suit.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone followed suit the next year.
to copy.
Jacksonville made the AFC Championship game with Leonard Fournette his rookie year, but then, you know, you could have drafted Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson instead. And they, you know, everybody was like, ew, especially when Lenny kind of fell off. And you saw the first running back taken in 2018. Was it Sony Michelle? I think so. Ahead of Lamar Jackson. And then 2019, we had and the point being is like, you saw a big drop off and now we've kind of seen it come back a little bit this year with Jahmyr Gibbs and Bijan Robinson. Although I think, to your point, Brady, that's probably more of a trend related to this draft class than it is overall running back success. I'm done.
Okay.
Now I'm done.
All right. And now we're done. This is going to wrap up the show for us today. Make sure you join us next week at 1 p.m. for all of your off-season coverage. And like, comment, subscribe on the YouTube page if you're listening to audio only. Download, follow, leave a 5-star review, and tell your friends to listen and watch the pod. Now we're done.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Ducible, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.